Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, I think of it as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. I am thrilled to have a man who has been very much in the throes of that war for many years, both inside the highest reaches of government and also now outside as a commentator and analyst. He is Jed Babin. He served as a deputy undersecretary of defense during the George H.W. administration. Today, he is a contributing editor and commentator at Epoch Times and The Washington Times. His newest book of many is one he co-authored with Herb London. It's entitled The BDS War Against Israel, the Orwellian Campaign to Destroy Israel Through the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement. Jed Babin, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Hey, great to be with you.
I don't know where to begin, Jed. It's such a target-rich environment, but maybe we could get your thoughts as kind of the overarching piece on the president's new national security strategy unveiled by his national security advisor, Susan Rice, last week at the Brookings Institution. What'd you make of it?
Well, as I wrote in the Washington Times today, to believe and accept any part of President Obama's new national security strategy requires a willing suspension of disbelief. It's really a cacophony of promises that are unmet and leadership that is not present in the Obama administration and really just does not reflect the current state of the world. So it's not a strategy at all. We do need a strategy to deal with not only the radical Islamists, but with the Russians, the Chinese, and so forth. And this document does not encompass any of the elements we need.
Yeah, you know, I was even struck by the fact that they've kind of airbrushed out of the strategy the people that you mentioned first, the whole threat of jihadism and Islamic supremacism and the doctrine of Sharia that seems to animate it. That's not evident in this strategy at all. It seems to go beyond just, you know, being disconnected from reality. Does this not constitute malfeasance with respect to national security policy?
Well, it certainly does. The Obama administration has been not just lax, but willfully ignorant of what is going on in the world. They act in disregard of the obvious consequences of our actions and really don't seem to have a grasp. I mean, in terms of a strategy document, I mean, this just isn't one, and no one who knows the definition of strategy could even label it so. And I really think there's nothing much in here that's of any value.
To the extent that there is, though, not just incompetence at work here, and I personally believe you can't ascribe all of this wrecking operation to sheer incompetence, it would appear that the president has made a conscious, deliberate decision to, well, for want of a better term, switch sides in this war, whether it's with respect to Iran or whether it's with respect to, sort of the Muslim Brotherhood or whether it's with respect to China or Russia. Am I wrong about that?
No, I think that in terms of switching sides, you can look and see what's going on right now. You can see the government of Kiev, the Ukrainians, begging for help in terms of military arms to set back the so-called little green men who are just Russian troops without the insignia. They really don't appreciate the dangers of putting Iran in control of the Middle East, which apparently they're trying to negotiate in the so-called nuclear agreement. And there's no real reason here to trust them to be fighting the real war against radical Islam. I mean, they won't even, as you say, they don't even mention the terms and refuse to recognize it. And Mr. Obama has said that in his speeches. His mission in life, I guess, is, as he said in one of his speeches, that the future does not belong to those who insult the prophet of Islam.
Sounded like he was channeling Osama bin Laden. He said that. Jed, you've spent a lot of time working on how do you prepare to contend with these sorts of threats. Give us a sense. You wrote very lucidly about this in the Washington Examiner recently, entitled Resourcing Relevance was the name of the piece. about what really is critical to national security and how are we stacking up in light of, well, the president's budgets as well as his strategy?
Well, we're really not. I mean, if you look at what we're investing in, and, you know, I don't want to just talk about more military spending, but the right kind of military spending. We're building now, we're spending $400 billion on the F-35, which is effectively going to be a Maginot Line in the sky. And in terms of, you know, the Maginot Line, we all remember, you know, between the two world wars, France spent, I don't know how many billions of dollars and how much money, how much effort and time in building the Maginot Line. And, of course, the Germans just drove around it in 1940. You know, we seem to be not resourcing ourselves with the assets we will need to face the threats that we have right now. I go back also, if I can just continue for a second, last March, March of last year, Lieutenant General Alexander, who is the commander of Cybercom, has said that he did not have the resources he needs to do what he needs to do. So obviously we're not investing smart, and we're not doing smart defense spending as opposed to just massive defense spending.
You mentioned in this article a very trenchant line that you say, quote, the elements most essential to national security are not aluminum and uranium. They are time and money, unquote. And talk, if you would, about the process whereby decisions about, well, at least money, if not time, but money has a way of either buying you time or costing you time as well, in the form of the Quadrennial Defense Review under the Obama administration. How's that working? And again, what is the condition of the military as a result of it all?
Well, it's not working at all. And we see that the military is not given the resources it needs in terms of the current battles. The QDR used to be basically a method of measuring the threats and matching the military budget to it. But right now, in the Obama administration, we've seen two QDRs, and they basically served only to paper over the already decided defense cuts. So if you're going to go about that, you're not having any relationship between what you need and what we're going to buy. So this is a failure in massive terms, and it's going to take many years, Frank. It may take 10 years or more to, frankly, to get around this and rebuild what we need to build.
Well, again, that assumes we have 10 years. What I think you as a student of history know, Jed Babin, so well is that, unfortunately, enemies often dictate the timing of conflicts. And if we find ourselves inviting them, maybe on a timetable that is very different than, say, we had in World War II, where we were given ample time to ramp up and create the arsenal for democracy and so on. Jed, let me turn to one other issue that you've tackled recently, which I think is tremendously important to have clarity about what the president is up to and whose side we're on. Talk about his Bergdahl problem.
Well, the Bergdahl problem is a massive one. We recall that Private Bo Bergdahl was recovered from the Haqqani network in Afghanistan, and we released the Taliban's five top commanders from Guantanamo Bay in order to get him back. Now, Bergdahl is almost certainly guilty of desertion. The army is struggling against the Obama administration, which is trying to get them to go easy on him. And quite frankly, that's an illegal interference in command by the top commander. Under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, command influence is something that is absolutely prohibited. But Mr. Obama is levying very heavy pressure on the army. They're so far resisting. And I think if the Army caves in and does not prosecute Bergdahl or lets him off on a very small charge, they will have not only given in on an enormously bad swap, but they are also going to be basically destroying the military justice system.
Yeah, and with it, further eroding, obviously, the military's esprit de corps and confidence in its leadership and probably its readiness more broadly. Jed, very quickly, you've talked about mushy allies contributing to this unhappy picture. Talk very quickly, if you would, about allies such as Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, who it seems to me go beyond mush. They're actually, at least a fair amount of the time, working for the other side, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I describe mushy allies, I'm usually talking about the NATO members, which basically have not, they've refused to invest in their own defenses, relying on us. And so far as Qatar and Turkey and so forth, I mean, they really are Islamist nations now. Turkey used to be the foundation stone of NATO in the Southwest Asia and the Middle East, but right now under Erdogan, they are certainly not a friend and quite probably are an enemy. They're against anything we do in Israel and against anything we try to do to, you know, forestall Iran's progress.
Jed Babin, so much more to talk about. Let's do it again soon. Thank you for both what you're doing at the moment at the Washington Times, at Epoch Times, and elsewhere, as well as your past service to our country. It's deeply appreciated. Next up, we will be speaking with Michael Auslan of the American Enterprise Institute about Japan, what China is doing to threaten it. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.